I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about one of the most controversial and least understood measures on the Indiana ballot next week, the proposed constitutional amendment protecting the right to hunt and fish. We'll talk about what it is and what it does. My guests are Todd Atkins, director of the NRA's Institute for Legislative Action, Tim Maloney, senior policy director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, and Aaron Wong, Indiana director for the Humane Society. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the proposed amendment to the Indiana Constitution protecting the right to hunt and fish. It is, at the same time, one of the most controversial and least understood measures on the ballot next Tuesday. If you'd like to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Todd Atkins. He is the Director of Research and Information for the National Rifle Association's Institute for Legislative Action. He's also a native Hoosier. Tim Maloney, who is the Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, and Aaron Wong, who is Indiana State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. Welcome to all of you.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you, John.
It's good to have
you here.
It's good to have you here. So I'm going to start first, so we lay a baseline, because this is one of the things about the presidential election this year, is it has tended to suck all of the oxygen out of the room. Everybody is focusing on it, and many other races and certainly ballot measures such as this one have struggled to get attention. So, Tim, I'm going to start with you. Can you just tell me tell the audience what is on the ballot? The question, without I'm going to elicit from everyone their positions on it, but I just want to set forth what is being considered.
Sure, John. The question for voters is asking them if they agree that the Indiana State Constitution should be amended to preserve the right of hunting and fishing for all Hoosiers on into the future as a constitutional right.
Okay, and there is some other verbiage in that. Am I not correct, Todd?
Yeah, so it actually, in a sense, and I think Tim and I previously have at least somewhat agreed on this, it essentially establishes a status quo with respect to who will have primary authority or the authority to regulate fishing and game activities, including hunting and fishing. But it certainly protects property rights. It protects against trespass. There have been allegations that it would give somebody a right to go ahead and trespass on your property if they were engaged in hunting and or fishing. So, but it essentially is what Tim described, but there is protective language that retains the authority in the General Assembly as well as the Department of Natural Resources to continue to regulate hunting and fishing activities as they have.
Okay. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Aaron, you actually have the language.
Yeah. Or
could you just read it so that we're, instead of interpreting here?
Sure. What will actually be on the ballot is the public question is, shall the Constitution of the State of Indiana be amended by adding a Section 39 to Article 1 to provide the right to hunt, fish, and harvest wildlife shall be forever preserved for the public good, subject only to the laws prescribed by the General Assembly and rules prescribed by virtue of authority of the General Assembly to promote wildlife conservation and management and to preserve the future of hunting and fishing. And I would note that it's a little bit different. This ballot language that came from Senate Bill 57 this past session is a little bit different than the language from the resolutions that passed in 2014 and 2015.
So I'm going to start and walk through. Todd, you are in favor of adding this language to the Indiana Constitution, right?
We are in favor. And to be clear, so your listeners understand, this type of language, variants of this language have now been passed in 19 states. It's actually part of Vermont's original constitution going way back to 1777. But the bulk of these 19 states have typically taken place in the past 20 or so years. And the National Rifle Association and other pro-hunting organizations started to push for these measures when we noted that national anti-hunting groups like the Humane Society of the United States started to severely encroach upon these activities in several states. And the point of the matter is, at the end of the day, you know, the United States has become the envy of the world when it comes to how we manage our fish and wildlife resources, that is, very successfully. And the kind of the backbone of that process, the North American wildlife management model, are those who hunt and fish that provide the philosophical support for scientifically based wildlife management decisions, and of course the financial backbone of how this process goes forward year to year in each of the states. So the simple fact of the matter is, state DNRs like Indiana DNR, who have done such a fantastic job to promote fish and wildlife resources to the benefit of all citizens, if you remove those who hunt and fish from that equation, then things become problematic in a hurry. So we noted that a lot of these groups want to do just that, that is, remove hunters and anglers from the equation. And that's what's brought us so much success. So we started to promote and push for these protections in the states beginning in the mid-1990s, and now we've had an additional 18 states pass such measures, generally by very wide margins in the states.
Okay, Aaron, since the Humane Society was invoked, I'm going to give you a chance. And you're in opposition to the amendment.
Yeah, we testified in opposition to the resolutions as they came forth in 2014 and 2015. I think that what people need to know as they're going out to vote is that this right is not under attack by anyone. The traditional fair chase hunting isn't something that is being attacked by any group. And it's like you said, it's a solution in search of a problem. We fear that this is going to tie the hands of lawmakers, because what's not in that ballot language that people aren't going to see that was in the resolutions was that hunting and fishing shall be the preferred means of managing wildlife and controlling wildlife, which is generally what we do now. But as different technology comes available, or if whatever that might be for the community, these may not be feasible solutions. So we fear that it's going to tie the hands of people making the laws and rules about conserving and managing wildlife.
Tim, it would be wrong for me not to take this around the horn and give you a chance to weigh in, too.
Sure.
What is Heck's position?
Well, the Hoosier Environmental Council is asking voters to vote no on question one. And I just want to be clear that that voters understand that this is not a referendum on whether people think hunting and fishing is a good or a bad thing. It's whether it should be protected by our Constitution. So hunting and fishing in Indiana is legal now. It's protected by the public trust doctrine and common law and case law. And as Aaron said, there is simply no threat that hunting and fishing in Indiana is in danger of going away. And so if this question is defeated by the voters, nothing changes. Hunting and fishing remains as it is.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the proposed amendment to the Indiana Constitution to enshrine the right to hunt and fish in the state's founding document. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Todd, I'm going to ask, because both, I think actually Aaron introduced the term here, a solution in search of a problem. Is there evidence here in Indiana that the right to hunt and fish is under some sort of threat or assault, something that would call for, because when you put something into the Constitution, you in effect are taking it out of the legislature's hands, taking it out of lawmakers' hands. Is there something that is so serious that that it would require this response?
Well, first, just to be clear, and I think Tim does agree with me on this, again, an area of rare agreement on this, but this constitutional language is clear that the General Assembly and the DNR do retain their authority to promulgate laws and or rules respecting fish and wildlife management, and that would include hunting and fishing activities. But to get to your to get directly to your question, I liken it to this. You know, the would we suggest to folks who are thinking about getting a vaccination to wait until they actually have a deadly disease to get the vaccination? Of course not. The simple truth of the matter is there are groups like Humane Society of the United States who are pressing throughout the nation to end hunting activities. Now, are they coming at it, you know, directly? No. So this type of protection, and I will say there are many constitutional protections, many of our original amendments in the Bill of Rights were not put in place simply because there was an immediate threat. Is we have to be more responsible than that and think about the threats that may visit us at a later date. And noting that these groups have a very clear intent, Wayne Pacelli, the head of the HSUS, has said his goal is to end all hunting. So do we wait until that threat is immediately on our doorstep? Well, some would argue that, but I would say when it comes to managing our fish and wildlife resources appropriately, and respecting the fact that all Hoosiers enjoy our fish and wildlife resources and the great abundance that is produced through this management paradigm, is to wait until that threat is immediately upon us is irresponsible. So is there a threat today, right now? I would be honest and say the answer is no, but we cannot allow these groups to continue to chip away at these activities when we know what their end goal actually is. That would be irresponsible for all citizens in Indiana or any other state because we rely so heavily on these activities to fund all wildlife management approaches that a state DNR takes. So, no, not today, but if they get their way, it could be sooner than we might think. So putting this protection in place is critically important to protect the status quo as we know it today.
Tim.
Well, just to clarify Todd's statement about our level of agreement, there's no question there's qualifying language in the constitutional amendment. The concern and the issue is, notwithstanding that qualifying language, that the courts in Indiana have traditionally set a very high bar for any kind of regulation or restriction on a constitutional right. And so our concern is that that high burden of proof to defend any restriction on hunting and fishing, be it size limits for fish or the specific days of a hunting season or the type of weapons that can be used or more commercial wildlife-related activities like commercial fishing or the industry of canned hunting, that there will be a cloud over the state of Indiana's ability to sensibly regulate and manage those activities. And that's just the way our case law is. So it's a very legitimate concern that qualifying language is just not going to do the job.
Aaron, I was going to go with. Todd has said now a couple of times that the Humane Society wants to do away with hunting. Is that true? Is the statement that he cited from the leader of the organization one that the leader made?
Well, you know what? What we focus on with what we're working on are the most egregious types of wildlife abuse. So we don't work on trying to end traditional fair chase hunting. We're working on things.
And we probably ought to assume. I know you live in that world, but we ought to explain what fair chase is.
Sure. I mean, with fair chase hunters, that it's not what we have, you know, what was just legalized in Indiana, which is the high-fenced hunting of semi-tame animals, the hunting of animals out in the wild. These are the types of things we work on and have been working on in Indiana for many years. And, you know, just to bring that up, can hunting is a great threat to traditional fair chase hunting. That's something that local hunting groups in Indiana, that national hunting groups in Indiana have been opposed to. And they, we also oppose, but those are the types of things we work on, not traditional hunting. So it's really just a distraction for what's actually happening here, and this language, trying to get this passed to the voters without talking about the unintended consequences.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about the proposed amendment to the Indiana Constitution protecting the right to hunt and fish. My guests are Todd Atkins from the National Rifle Association, Tim Maloney from the Hoosier Environmental Council, and Aaron Wong from the Humane Society of the United States. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the proposed amendment to the Indiana Constitution to protect the right to hunt and fish. My guests are Todd Atkins. He is the Director of Research and Information for the National Rifle Association's Institute for Legislative Action. Tim Maloney, who is the Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, and Aaron Wong. She is Indiana State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. We're starting to get all kinds of messages and phone calls. I know from experience with this, we have many of the issues that people really care about involved in this discussion. Guns, the environment, animal rights, and, you know, many fundamental questions. So I'm going to ask everyone involved to be respectful. I'm going to make sure everyone has a chance to be heard, as many different points as possible. I'm going to ask our callers to be concise in asking their questions so we can get as many in as possible. Todd, you wanted to respond to Aaron's response when we were running to the break, so I'm going to let you give you a little bit of time to do that, and then we're going to start taking some of these calls.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Just to be clear, that Aaron did not actually answer your question. Wayne Pacelli has said that about wanting to end all hunting. And while I appreciate the fact that she's correct that HSUS doesn't come directly at all hunting when it seeks to restrict hunting activities, at the same time, I would just ask your listeners to use Google. It's a great tool to try and find those places where HSUS is actually supported, that is, proactively supported hunting activities in some way, shape, or form. And I would say that my Google searches come up in vain, that they attack specific types of hunting to chip away at the broader question of hunting in general. So I just wanted to respond that, in fact, Wayne Pacelli has said such things in the past, among others. His goal at the end of the day is pretty clear, where he would like to take his organization in attacking hunting more broadly.
We are talking about the proposed constitutional amendment to protect the right to hunt and fish. Gary, you are on the air.
Hunter, for 40 years, I opposed this question. One of the biggest things, which you guys already discussed, is how the language is going to actually provide protections into an industry of canned hunting in the state of Indiana. One of the other issues, I know that the Safari Club International has always been a proponent of canned hunting, and now is strictly backing this bill or this amendment. Can the panel comment on how much they are actually involved, the Safari Club International, in moving this amendment forward?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Gary. Todd.
Was that to me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I think he's asking about the level of support.
Well, I know Safari Club supports a yes vote on this question. Safari Club is one of the organizations that the NRA has worked with on various and sundry issues over the years. But I will say, again, referring to the language itself, because we have to be very careful here that we don't allow ourselves to be diverted In fact, the language is particular that the General Assembly retains authority to take these activities, and the DNR, by virtue of that authority as an administrative agency, is likewise retains their authority to do so. And in fact, if you look at recent news coverage of this issue, DNR spokespeople have said as much. They've agreed with that statement that they will it will generally be the status quo when it comes to whether they can or cannot regulate hunting and fishing activities.
Got an email from a listener named Katie, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Katie says, how would this amendment affect environmental protections that are now law or may be needed in the future? Tim, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, again, this gets to the question of whether those existing laws and regulations that are intended to protect fish and wildlife habitat, protect threatened and endangered and non-game species, would those protections be subject to challenge using this amendment as the basis for those challenges? And I don't anticipate the Indiana DNR changing their approach if this is adopted. It's what the question is, what the courts might do when challenges are brought using this amendment as the reason to push back against reasonable regulation, either of fishing and hunting activities or, for example, the new catfish rules that were put in place by DNR that affect commercial cat fishermen. What you can never predict precisely what courts will do, and that prospect is out there, and we think it will put a cloud over both the DNR's authority and over the legislators' willingness to adopt needed legislative initiatives to protect fish and wildlife.
We've gotten a comment from Pamela, a listener via Facebook, and if you want to find us on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Pamela writes, if you do not care about an animal's right to live free of harm, then what about my right to not be killed by a stray bullet when I'm walking in the woods, which is my right to do, or not having my children be killed or injured when they are outside, or my pets? Or what about my right to a peaceful livelihood, to be able to sit on my porch and not have to listen to shooting all day and night? I fear that my children, pets, myself, as well as my home will be affected by this. But of course, anyone who ambushed, baits, and slaughters animals doesn't care about anyone or anything other than themselves. Todd, I got to give you a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, so I would say that the that was via email. The emailer obviously has a position that is strongly against hunting generally, and I would suggest she's probably going to vote no on question one. But going back to the central point of this is the status quo is going to remain unchanged. You know, and to Tim's point, or the point that Tim's trying to make, is Alabama has had a similar language on the books since 1996, and we now have 19 states with variations on the right to hunt and fish within their constitutions. And to listen to this sky is falling argument that DNRs will be hamstrung by the courts or other systems, it just has not come to pass in other states. Is these states have continue to be as successful managing their fish and wildlife populations as they were before they had such language. The critical difference is if Hoosiers decide to vote yes, a majority of Hoosiers decide to vote yes, what we will be protecting against is the eventuality of the anti-hunting groups coming to the state and changing the methods, the means by which we actually manage fish and wildlife for the good of all Hoosiers. Many Hoosiers just don't understand that when they visit a fish and wildlife area or they utilize a boat ramp, that fishing and hunting aren't just activities. They aren't just pastimes. They are the backbone of how we manage this entire system throughout the state. And without hunters and anglers, providing the resources through their taxes on ammunition and firearms, et cetera, and their license fees, is the entire paradigm would have to shift. And it has been the most successful wildlife management model that the world has ever seen. So this protection is not just about these activities. This protection is about our fish and wildlife resources generally. And I must add, that includes non-game wildlife as well, because when DNR engages in a management activity to, let's say, benefit wild turkeys, which have been brought back now from extirpation in Indiana, well, other wildlife species, non-game wildlife species, bluebirds, et cetera, benefit as well. So it's not just about hunting and fishing per se itself. It's about this entire structure, this wildlife management structure that we've been so successful in building with the financial and philosophical support of hunters and anglers every step of the way.
I want to get to the question that's also somewhat behind Pamela's question here, too, which is in her location, because it's one of the things we hear about, that this also takes any sort of regulation in regard to hunting and fishing out of the hands of local governments and puts everything at the state government level. Is that a fair reading of the legislation, Aaron? Proposed amendment.
Yes, I think maybe to some degree. I think it also, that, like Tim has said, that we kind of worry about challenges being asserted to the court and the type of scrutiny that a court is going to have to use in interpreting any new laws or any wildlife management rules that come down if someone chooses to challenge it based on their now constitutional right, which before has been a right not heightened to this level.
Todd, why is it important to take all of these questions exclusively to the state level? Because you're right, it still says the General Assembly can make changes, but not at the local level.
Well, I would say when it comes to fish and wildlife management issues, it's critically important that state wildlife managers can engage in programs and activities at the state level, because ecosystems do not exist at the local level, for lack of a better phrase. That is, if you think of a township, and if you were just to manage, let's say, a white-tailed deer population within that township, of course, that doesn't make much sense, or it wouldn't be that productive, simply because fish and wildlife resources exist in entire ecosystems. So you have to take a much broader view of appropriate ways to manage them to their benefit, to citizens' benefit. And I will say, I've noted that recently a number of arguments have come up about firearm preemption issues with respect to localities' ability to engage in restrictions on firearm usage. Now, that issue has already been preempted at the state level, and it has nothing to do with this question. So when it comes to firearm usage, localities have already been preempted by the General Assembly by state statute, and it's a bit of a red herring, because they're already restricted in how they can approach firearm usage. This question is actually about fish and game resources and how hunting and fishing activities are to be managed. So I would say when we manage fish and game appropriately, we need to look at entire ecosystems, and you just simply can't do that at the local level.
We are talking about the proposed constitutional amendment to protect hunting and fishing here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what Beverly has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Beverly, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind is the fact that they want to use a constitutional amendment to do this, regardless of the arguments I'm hearing about the ecosystem and managing wildlife, fish and game. I don't believe any of those things are really relevant for the argument in favor of this amendment. This should be more properly managed with a code, an Indiana code, a statute that would cover the state. This is appealing to a special interest group, and all of these other things that he's bringing up to use his own words, but in a different way, are red herrings. They're distractions, and they're irrelevant to the idea that this is the wrong way to amend our state constitution.
And I should say, thanks for the call, Beverly, in the interest of sort of synthesizing and consolidating, giving as many people as possible a chance to be heard, we've gotten emails from Kelly and George that have similar themes, that regardless of the merits of the idea, putting it into the Constitution is the wrong way to go about it, that it could be done simply with a statute. Todd, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to speak to that, and then I'm going to give Tim a chance.
Yeah, so we can get to others. I will be as brief as I can. I appreciate Beverly's concern. This is an argument that we see quite a bit. Our position is this. Number one, hunting and fishing are part of the fabric, certainly in states like Indiana. They do those activities, and Fish and Wildlife Management paradigm do, in our view, rise to the level of constitutional protection, because the great success we've enjoyed does deserve special protection. I don't view hunting and fishing as I would golf or bowling, because you can't drive across the state of Indiana and enjoy fish and wildlife resources without hunting and angling being part of that story. So to us, it's not just about the activities. It's about protecting this paradigm that all Hoosiers enjoy on a day-in, day-out, year-wide basis. So it does, in our view, rise to constitutional protections, because without hunting and angling there at the core, we would lose so much. And in our view, that does deserve constitutional protection. The fact that we brought wild turkeys back from extirpation does deserve that. The structure that provided for that does deserve constitutional protection.
Tim.
Well, typically, constitutional rights are reserved for those values that are universally shared by the entire populace, and I agree with Todd that our North American model of wildlife management has been very successful and is something that that we want to persist, but arguing that hunting and fishing are a universally shared value of all the population is just not the case, and it risks leading to the extreme that all kinds of activities that are traditional that people have been doing for hundreds of years but are not rise to that level of constitutional protection, that people will be seeking that, and again our wildlife management systems, fishing and hunting, are not under any risk, and this is again just a solution in search of a problem.
Aaron, one of the arguments that we have heard too is the fact that it enshrines hunting and fishing as the means of wildlife, and therefore might preclude other options should they come down the line. Is that one of the Humane Society's concerns?
Sure. I mean, that is one of the concerns, that DNR and the state legislature won't be free to consider other options as they are feasible to that community, or that local communities and local leaders won't be able to perhaps deal with wildlife management issues in a way that they think is best suited for their community or that's the safest for their community. So this does bring up some big concerns. And I think one of the callers actually kind of spoke to that earlier, or the emailers spoke to that earlier, that having local leaders be able to have some control over that is very important as well.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the proposed amendment to the Indiana Constitution that would protect the right to hunt and fish. My guests are Todd Adkins. He is the Director of Research and Information for the National Rifle Association's Institute for Legislative Action. Tim Maloney, who is Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, and Aaron Wong, who is Indiana State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the proposed amendment to the Indiana Constitution that would protect the right to hunt and fish. My guests are Todd Adkins. He is the director of research and information for the National Rifle Association's Institute for Legislative Action. Tim Maloney, he is senior policy director for the Hoosier Environmental Council. And Aaron Wong, who is Indiana State Director for the Humane Society, the United States. We've gotten a question, or more of a comment, an anecdote, from a listener named Michael via Facebook. And if you want to reach out to us via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits, WFYI. Michael says, "It is not true. Things have been the same in other states. I'm a member of the ICCA and recently was involved in the catfish regulations. You just have to look at Kentucky to see the devastation of catfish from commercial fishermen down there. Nothing can be changed because this is now part of the state constitution. That is the reason why the commercial fishermen were so quiet and not at the catfish meetings for regulations. This is absolutely not needed, and it is a way for excessive greed to affect our fisheries, among other things." Tim, I'm going to give you the first word on that, but I promise, Todd, you will get a chance to respond too.
Well, I think the listener, you know, points out the concern that, again, enshrining these activities as constitutional rights will place a cloud over the state's ability to properly regulate and protect our fish and wildlife resources. And that, you know, even in the circumstances where there have been no specific case decisions yet, the threat of legal action or, you know, political efforts towards pushback of reasonable fish and wildlife regulation are exist out there. And we saw that with the political and legal efforts of the canned hunting industry in Indiana pushing against state oversight with ultimately quite a bit of success. And so it's just not at all accurate to say this is a hollow threat or a red herring. It's a real threat. And we've spoken to a lot of hunters. We don't speak for hunters, but we speak to them. And have heard many express those same concerns and be conflicted about the merits or drawbacks of this proposal, in that they, you know, if they're hunters, they want to protect hunting, but on the other hand, they believe strongly that hunting needs proper oversight and see the unintended consequences of this.
And I can see that Aaron also wants to jump in on this, but Todd, I promise you the next word. Aaron, you will get the last word, and then we're going to move on to another caller. No, I'm going to give Todd first crack, and then you.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure, and I'll be brief. My understanding of the controversy regarding commercial catfishing in Kentucky long predates passage of the right to hunt and fish in 2012, and I don't have any evidence, at least that I'm aware of, that the right to hunt and fish has had anything to say, so to speak, on that longstanding debate and controversy in the state of Kentucky.
Aaron.
Sure. Just to kind of, I guess, echo something of what Tim said, is that this is a real threat, that people may be challenging it, and that's one of the unintended consequences, that whether or not they're successful, the state may have to spend large sums of money in defending against some of these folks that are coming forth challenging things like bag limits or season dates or things like this that they're purporting that are their constitutional rights. So this is something that the state really doesn't need to have to deal with. They don't have to deal with now, especially for something that's not being threatened.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Charles. Our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Charles says, "I'm 65 years old, a lifetime Indiana resident, and have hunted and fished all my life and shared that with my three children and now their children. I've also hunted and fished across this great country in over half the states and met and learned from many other hunters and professional outfitters as well. As a result, there is no doubt in my mind that our rights to hunt and fish are under attack, just like our rights to bear arms and other personal freedoms as well. It may be subtle and slow at times, but it has tried to whittle away on those rights, and I'm convinced it will continue to do that, probably even if this constitutional amendment is passed. So there is no doubt, in my opinion, and no doubt, doubt is in all caps for emphasis, in my opinion, that we should pass this to hopefully stem that tide at least somewhat, and then get ready for the next line of attack that will certainly come after this. My guess is, Todd, you have little to add to that other than amen, right?
No, bravo. I mean, it's kind of the message that, you know, they will continue to chip away, and you don't get vaccinated against deadly disease when you already have the deadly disease. You have to prepare and plan, and again, to embrace our fish and wildlife resources in the state of Indiana and the paradigm we've all come to love and appreciate, we have to instill these protections now or as soon as we can to protect against what may come in the future.
Got an email from our regular listener, Jerry. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, "This proposed constitutional amendment smells to me like RFRA Redux, a seemingly innocuous proposal with no immediate or reasonably foreseeable impact on the status quo, leaves the door wide open for unintended consequences. Why open this potential can of Pandora's boxes?" I'm going to give Erin the first word on this one, since I've been saving her for the end on many of the others. What are the possible unintended consequences that concern the Humane Society the most? I'm going to give Tim a chance to comment, and then Todd, I'll give you the last word on this one.
Yeah, I think exactly, you know, what we've already said, that people may come forth wanting to challenge things like bag limits and seasons, or it may even embolden poachers to come forth saying that this is restricting their now constitutional right. I think what people need to understand is that this is changing your state constitutional rights. It is adding this as a heightened protection, which is something that many other activities are not afforded in our state. So this is really opening up our a sacred state document to include something, as Tim said, that is not universal. And so we feel like even if folks are not necessarily successful in their challenges to this, that we are going to have to defend against these as a state, and then perhaps they will have some ground there. So it's just opening up a can of worms that's completely unnecessary.
Tim and then Todd.
Well, again, John, I think we've largely expressed those concerns about limitations and a cloud over the state's ability to do its job in protecting our fish and wildlife resources, whether they're species that are hunted and fished for or non-game species, and that's just not warranted given that there is no threat that hunting and fishing in Indiana is going to go away. And again, if this amendment doesn't pass, nothing changes. It's still the status quo that hunting and fishing is completely legal in Indiana, as managed and regulated by our State Department of Natural Resources.
Todd.
You know, I would simply point out again that Indiana would be the 20th state to pass such a protection. And I've talked to fish and wildlife managers in many of those other 19 states, and there is no cloud over the management of fish and wildlife resources in those states. They are still doing very effective jobs in promoting the public good, in promoting fish and wildlife resources. And, you know, being from a national organization, I've got the good fortune that I get the 30,000-foot rule, and I can guarantee you there are a lot of folks who live in West Coast states and in the Northeast who, if we had had this same discussion with them 20 or 30 years ago, they would have said, there's no problem. We're not under attack. They're not going to come after us. And they would have something much, much different to say today. So I say it would be irresponsible if we do enjoy and appreciate and respect our fish and wildlife resources to wait till that day comes when anti-hunting groups do continue to chip away and do make major moves. It would be irresponsible for us to wait for that to happen. Let's go ahead and get this protection in place, appreciate our fish and wildlife resources as they exist today, and so we can protect that paradigm for future generations in the state.
Todd, I've gotten several questions from listeners. Because this is a priority, it sounds like, for the National Rifle Association, how much is the NRA spending in support of enshrining this in Indiana's Constitution?
In Indiana, I don't have a specific figure in front of me. I will say we are engaged in a very positive campaign that involves our usual campaign infrastructure, social media, email campaign, direct mail campaign that is running statewide for not just the right to hunt and fish, but candidates as well. So I would call it an aggressive and very positive campaign in support of this.
And I appreciate that, but I'm going to say, if you don't have a specific dollar figure, can you give me a ballpark? Is it six figures? Is it seven figures?
It certainly isn't seven figures, but I would say six figures is not out of the question.
Six figures, mid-six figures. We have gotten a question from a listener named Becky on Facebook. And again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. I also would ask our listeners, because it's clear we are going to run out of time to deal with all of your questions here, that you can continue the conversation on Facebook. I'm going to ask our guests, if they would, to visit our Facebook page and answer questions there as they pop up. Becky's question is, of the 19 states that have amended their constitutions, how many also allowed canned hunting or commercial fishing? Do you know the answer to that, Todd?
I do not. But I will say generally, we have to be careful again. Fish and wildlife management that takes place within fish and game departments, or in India's case, a DNR, in most cases, if not all, canned hunting, so-called canned hunting, is not part of the normal structure of fish and wildlife management that is setting hunting regulations. In many, if not most, of the states, the so-called canned hunting is generally approached from a different agency. It might be an ag agency or something like that, because in most cases, and this is one of those terms that is either broadly or strictly defined, when you strictly define what some would call canned hunting, it's not hunting, because, as Aaron has said, fair chase is not involved. So I don't have a specific answer, unfortunately, for the listener.
Aaron or Tim, do either one of you have the answer to that?
I don't.
Thank you. Tim? No?
No, not precisely.
Okay. We've gotten an email from a listener named Sherman, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Sherman writes, shall the Constitution of the state of Indiana be amended, goes through the language. He says, also, I'm not sure which states introduced legislation on this issue in 2016, but those measures did not pass in the legislatures in Missouri and at least five other states. Is that the case, Todd? Was it up before the legislatures in other states this year?
It was. I don't have that specific number in front of me, but, you know, as Tim described on another show earlier, this issue typically, because amending a constitution is typically not a one-year or one-shot deal, it has to visit a legislature typically more than once anyway. In Indiana's case, it actually had to pass two legislative sessions, and that's the case in most states. It's not something that generally, when it is introduced in a state, is immediately passed, simply because, as legislatures often do, there needs to be a lot of input. It doesn't necessarily mean because it doesn't pass, people are naturally opposed. What it means is the language, as with all legislation, needs to be refined or amended or changed. But typically what we see when it reaches a final form, as it did in Indiana, that it's passed by very wide majorities in both a state house and a Senate, as was done in Indiana.
We've gotten another email question from a listener named Marnie, and I'm trying to sift through these and reflect as many of the different kinds of questions as people have. Marnie writes about litigation that has resulted from this sort of language being added to the constitutional amendments in these other states. I think, Tim, you have made reference to the fact that it creates an opportunity for litigation. Are you aware of instances of that elsewhere in the country?
We're aware of litigation. If the question is, can we point to a specific case where a fish or wildlife regulation was was overturned solely because of a constitutional right to hunt and fish. I've not found that. Doesn't mean it's not out there, but and that doesn't change the reality that such decisions could come down the pike in the future.
And Todd, I'm going to ask a question because a lot of what we're hearing is there is no problem here right now, and to some degree, the argument on both sides is that at least for the immediate future, this amendment wouldn't change things all that much. I know your argument's preventative, and you talk about a vaccine, but the other extreme of that is saying, because I might get gangrene in my leg, I ought to chop it off at some point. That, you know, so, you know, so I guess what I'm trying to get at there is, absent a threat, why is it such a priority that this be done now?
Yeah, and I appreciate the question very much. An immediate threat is different than a threat. So when I say, no, there's not an immediate threat in Indiana, that's just simply the case. There is not an immediate threat that's going to hit us today in the state of Indiana. But is there a threat? Oh, you bet there's a threat. And as I said, you can just look to states in the Northeast and the West Coast. And see, it's not just about changing a specific regulation or putting an issue on the ballot. The anti-hunters move much more carefully than that. It may come down to, in some states, we see the evidence where they've infiltrated fish and game commissions, that is, attempting to influence ongoing regulations, change existing regulations and or statutes on how we manage, including hunting restrictions, et cetera. So is there a threat? I would say you betcha. And when a group that is as well-heeled as Humane Society of the United States, when they have a leader who has made it so abundantly clear that his end goal, his end state, what he really wants is to end hunting, then we have to take that seriously. We have to be responsible and say, this is a very well-heeled group, a lot of financial resources, and this is what their leader's end goal is. Well, we can't just sit around and wait and see when that actually may occur. We have to work on behalf of fish and wildlife managers, work on behalf of hunters and anglers, and take those protective measures when we can, where we can, to protect against that. So we just see it as being responsible on behalf of our members in a state like Indiana.
I'm going to have to jump in on you because we are getting close on time. I'm going to ask real quickly, Tim, if this passes, then what is the next step? It goes back before the legislature, correct?
No, I don't believe so. It becomes part of the Constitution.
Okay. Yep. Well, I would like to thank my guests and all of our listeners. We are going to continue the conversation on Facebook. I hope you will join us. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Sean. No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.